Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudet.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
In today's episode, we're going to address the topic of tools that help us to be successful in our translation businesses and that we wanted to share with the rest of you. So just to specify, not cat tools per se that are specifically related to translation, but just all kinds of tools that Corinne and I have found helpful in our own practices and that our listeners might as well.
And in this episode, we're going to be a little less structured than usual in that we're just going to trade one tip at a time and tell you why we find that particular tool helpful. So I'll be talking about five specific individual tools or tips, and Eve has organized hers into categories. So she's going to talk about one category at a time. And Eve, how about you kick things off?
So I wanted to talk a little bit about editing tools. So recently I attended a webinar on editing tools by ACES, the American Society for Editing, and they kind of, I'm kind of obsessed with editing anyway, and and they got me kind of thinking about that. So when Corinne and I came up with this topic, I was like, oh yeah, I want to talk about editing tools. So here I go. Yeah. So the first thing is that a lot of you probably do have, but is I want to talk about copy editing checklists. So the way I do it is I have my own that I've kind of built up over the years, and that I also do specific for each project. So I kind of have my own upper level one, and then I kind of specify, you know, I adapt it to each project. And so I use it when I'm doing self-proofing of my own work, and I use these also when I'm editing or proofing other people's work. So the things I look at are, depending on the content, but I look at things like, are there certain grammatical structures in this particular project that need to be double checked? So I'll add that to my adapted checklist for that project. Are there certain, currency formats, in this particular project that need to be checked? So I use my own past editing checklist as a guideline, as well as some that are put together by others. And I wanted to share, and we'll put this in the show notes, on that webinar that I attended, I thought they had really good checklists that they shared, and they weren't just shared with us, they're on their website. So it's not like I'm sharing something that wasn't supposed to be shared. And it was the company that put on the webinar was Dragonfly Editorial, and they had some really good copy editing checklist that I will share with you guys. So that's one thing. And then you can use that and edit it, kind of to your own, edit the checklist to your own needs or whatever. So the other tool for editing that I wanted to mention was Perfectit, which I know different people have known. And I know this is only for people who work in English that I know of. Corinne, that's what you understand too, right? For Perfectit?
Correct.
Yeah, it's only in English. So sorry, other people. But anybody can use it for anything, really. And if you write in English at all, then it was useful to you. So they're currently on version 4. And again, I use it to do proofing of my own work and when I'm editing or proofing other people's work. And me personally, I had some issues with getting version 3 to run after a while. It just stopped working. And so because I used to use it a lot. And then I was a little bit reticent to get version 4, but I did download the free version because they let you use it, I think, for 30 days or maybe it's 15 days. And it seems to be working fine. And there's discounts for it. I think it's $99 or $100 if you buy it. And there's discounts through various groups, such as ATA has a discount for it, and ACES, the Society for Editing in the US, offers a discount for it. And they also do have, it's kind of interesting, even though it's just into English, they do have specifically cover different variants of English. They say they know it covers US or UK or Canadian or Australian English. So you can tweak it for that. And that's at intelligentediting.com. And so there, when I use my checklists in my own mind, I do a lot of stuff that it does manually. And I think you can get more into the nitty gritty that way, but it can deal with, sometimes, you just can't get everything, not necessarily manually. I mean, I use automated checks in a way in Word that I'm, but I'm kind of implementing them manually where I'm doing it step by step. And so you just can't catch everything that way. And so it's really helpful. It'll do things like, it will check inconsistent term use for a single language only, though not between two languages. It'll check capitalization issues that sometimes I'm just not able to check with macros or otherwise. It'll check, italics issues. Oh, you italicize this word here, but not here. And you can also program it to have specific style rules that you want it to check. So And also to do another plug for ACES, this is May 2020 that we're recording this, and they are offering a webinar on how to use Perfectit to most of your advantage for beginners and for advanced users. And it's free for members, which I'm a member, and it's a really good deal because the membership's not that expensive if anyone wants to join ACES. They have really nice, really good webinars, really interesting webinars about English language use. And usually it's $30 for non-members for webinars, but right now until July 31st, I think in the spirit of the pandemic, they're offering their webinars free to non-members through July 31st.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So they have a lot of great other webinars too. So we'll put the ACES webinar links to the on the show notes.
And on Perfectit, you're much more of a power user than I am, Eve, but another thing I would mention is you can set it to check for compliance with specific style guides that are preloaded into Perfectit. So not that that's a substitute for knowing the style guide yourself, it isn't, but if you have clients that use like AP style or World Health Organization style or whatever, I do find, it doesn't make you an expert in using that style guide, but it is super helpful. And one thing I learned from Perfectit is I am a very inconsistent writer. So for example, words that have two allowable spellings like gray, G-R-A-Y, and gray, G-R-E-Y, I do stuff like that all the time. I found and Perfectit flags that too.
Yeah. And what I think is really great too, like you said, even when I first do my manual pass, it alerted me to things like, oh, I should actually be looking for this too in my manual pass, because I think I really do think, for me anyway, it takes both of those. Like I think like Perfectit's not going to catch it all. Right. I'm not going to catch it all. But when we go together, we're probably going to catch almost all of the stuff, you know, all the different things. And so it alerts me to things that I don't normally look for manually. And I was like, oh, I got to start adding that to my manual checklist too, because I didn't think of that. One was the other day was, I always check for punctuation being similar at the end of bulleted lists, but I didn't necessarily look for capitalization at the beginning of each list. Like, oh, some lines were capitalized at the beginning and some of them weren't. And I wasn't looking for that.
Right. Yeah.
So Perfectit caught it, but it's better to try to catch it first anyway. So, one of the webinars that's going to be on is just what you said, Corinne, is on how to use standardized standardized style guides.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that he's going to talk about more of that. And one of those free webinars coming up.
Cool.
So, yeah. Then I really like the Speak tool. And I don't want to steal Corinne's thunder because I know she wanted to talk about this too. So I think I use
go for it.
I think I use the Speak tool. And I think, Corinne, you use the Read Aloud tool. And it's weird that there's two of those in Word. But isn't that right? You use Read Aloud?
Yeah, I use Read Aloud. And then I use a separate program called Text Aloud that I'm going to talk about
so
also.
So I'll talk a little bit about Speak and a little bit about Read Aloud. But I want Corinne talk about that more. But I use the Speak tool in Word. And that's available in Word, Outlook, PowerPoint, and OneNote. So we have talked about this before different times on the webcast, on the podcast, but if you have MS Office, and I personally mainly use that tool for Speak, for Word. I use the Speak tool for Word, but if you want to, it's also available in Outlook and PowerPoint and OneNote. So what I use it for is I read text back to help me proof it, because it's just another way of input. Instead of my eyes, it's my ears hearing it. And then I can hear like, oh, there's a mistake. And actually, if you type, if you misspell a word, it just tries to read it. It's kind of funny.
It doesn't. One thing I recently found is that as an example, it doesn't know the word monetize. It pronounces it Monet eyes, like the artist Monet.
That's interesting. But I think
comes to a word it doesn't know, it just takes its best guess.
Yeah. So then you realize too, like, oh, I mean, I always spell check multiple times anyway, but then it'll, think, oh, I thought I spelled language right, but it says, it pronounced it language. So obviously I spelled it wrong. It doesn't correct it for you, which is good because then it's spelled wrong in there. So I do that I have it speak to me for really important emails, not all the time, but for really important emails too, or if I'm drafting an email or a marketing piece or something like that. And I also have it read a lot. If it's 100,000 words, probably not, but especially if you're marketing text, I have it read, project work back to me too. And so I have a a link for you guys that we'll post to that's about the specifically about the speak tool. And also I have it programmed to be on my toolbar for Word so that I just highlight the text and I just click it and it starts reading it. And you can also get it to read in various languages if you program that or you insert the language packs. And the other thing that's funny, which I think Corinne's heard too, is you can even make it speak in various languages without having the language pack, and then it's like this terrible American accent, which is really funny. So
right. It just, if you need a laugh sometime,
yeah.
Have one of the English voices read something to you in French.
Yeah. So we'll post a link to the Microsoft page on their site that tells how to set up Speak, so it's pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Read Aloud, which is a separate program that also reads aloud within, not program, a feature in Word. Mm-hmm. And that is from the review, toolbar. That's then you go to read aloud on the toolbar. But Corinne will talk to us more about that because I know that you use that one more than I do. So okay, so go for it.
Great. So yeah, my first tip was specifically on text to speech proofreading. So I've talked about it before, but I have trouble editing my own translations. I mean, for the same reason we all have trouble editing our own translations, but also because. Two things that I love about text-to-speech. Number one, I have a tendency to read too fast. So for example, when I have an error, like one that I caught with the text-to-speech method the other day, was I had meant to type on solid footing, and I typed on sold footing, leaving out the I in solid. And I honestly probably would not catch that in writing because my eyes just skim over it. Whereas,
and it's a word, right? S-O-L-D yes. is a word. So that's hard. Right. That's a really good example because those are the types of typos that are hard to catch.
Right. Because the spell checker isn't going to flag it because sold is, a real word. Or you meant to type sales force and you wrote sales farce. So things that are words, but it's the wrong word. And obviously you hear those, they really jump out at your ear, the difference between solid and sold or force and farce. And then I think my other reason for using it is I don't get repetitive strain in my hands, even when I'm working too much. I just don't. Maybe because I do a lot of yoga, I really never have RSI problems with my arms and hands. Mm-hmm. But I easily get eye strain, even though I don't have bad eyesight. So I don't know what it is, really, because I go to the eye doctor every year. I don't even wear glasses in normal life, and I use a large monitor and all the things we're all supposed to do. I do wear computer glasses. But in the end, I'm just prone to eye strain. And so I find that, text-to-speech is really helpful for that because sometimes I'll have it read me web pages or long emails or things like that. And even if I'm following along with my eyes, I don't have to read it as closely if it's being read to me at the same time.
Yeah, I don't have to focus as much on it.
Exactly. So two tools that I wanted to mention are, Eve talked a bit about the Microsoft Word review, the Read Aloud tool, which is under the review tab in the more modern versions of Microsoft Word. And then one thing I have really come to love is a program called Text Aloud. So their website is nextup.com. They don't have a free trial, but there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. And I will say that's not an affiliate deal, but I did get the program for free in exchange for reviewing it on my blog. And so I know, it always sounds a little weird when someone says, I would have paid for it, but I didn't have to. But I do actually feel like even if you get the basic program is $35 US and the extra voice packs are $25 each. So I do feel like you could get
the voice packs localized, or what do you mean voice packs? What
are right. Those? So the $35 program gives you the basic Microsoft voices. And then here's the thing that's cool though, if you get what they call the premium voices, is the premium voices can read foreign languages without the language pack installed on your computer.
Oh, nice.
So for example, they gave me two French voices. I think I have one male and one female French voice. And that's the thing that I find really, really nice is that I can have them read to me in French, even though I don't have the French version of Word or the French language pack installed on my computer. So I feel like that's a big advantage. And Text Aloud has a lot of if you are a heavy user of text-to-speech, it has a lot of convenience features that Microsoft Office doesn't have that I love. So for example, you can scroll. These sound like tiny things, but believe me, when you do this for hours and hours, the way I have started using it, they make a big difference. So you can scroll the source language document while it's reading the target language document, and it doesn't pause. So in Microsoft Office, if you mess around with anything in the interface, the reading voice will pause. Whereas Text Aloud doesn't do that. It keeps reading. And better yet, you can make small changes to the target document while it's reading and it keeps going.
I know you're convincing me, Corinne. Yeah. Yes. Thanks. This whole episode's worth it for me. No, because just like you said, those sound like small things, but every single time it's super annoying actually that you make one small change because you see the error and then you have to start it over or you have to start.
So you hear it read, you know, the programs are on sold footing and you think, oh shoot, that's got to be solid, but I just have to stick an I in that word. I'm not, you know, rearranging the whole sentence. It keeps reading while you do that. So like right now I'm doing a project for one of my NGO clients where I'm translating 23 country reports that are all 4,000 to 6,000 words each. So you're talking about sitting there and listening to Text Aloud read for like 2 hours at a time by the time you're pausing and making changes and all that stuff. And believe me, when you're sitting there for 46 hours, I mean, not at once, but total over the course of the project, when you're sitting there for a total of 46 hours, these little convenience features make a really big difference. So
I
am a convert.
I use mostly in Microsoft Word Speak, I'm pretty sure that one that I recall lets me make changes as it's going. Yeah. But it does not let you, like you said, which is a really big deal, it does not let you scroll two different documents at the same time because it would pause.
Yep. You can scroll the documents unevenly in Text Aloud. You can make small adjustments to the target document while it continues reading. And then it also has, I don't use them that much, but you can change the reading speed. And I just use the default reading speed, but you can, you know, adjust the reading speed a lot more in a lot more nuanced way than you can. And it also, it just reads more stuff more easily. Like it can read PDFs, it can read web pages. So especially
So what does it read?
Much anything.
So it would read web pages. It would read,
PDFs.
So and just to confirm for everybody again, it's reading to us. It's not like we're inputting our voice.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. But if you, like me, use it partially because you have eye strain issues, I think the reading PDFs is a really nice feature because if you're reading some sort of documentation or, you know, things like that, it's really nice to have it read PDFs to you. So I think that everybody should experiment with the MS Word read aloud feature just for your own use. It's included if you have the more modern version, so why not try it? And I think that getting Text Aloud is a, you know, very worthwhile investment of around $50. So
And we'll post all the information about that on the show notes.
Over to you.
Great. Yeah. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was images. So, you know, how we use images for a lot of things. You use them for blog posts on your own. If you have your own website, or use them for blog posts on LinkedIn, or just so many things that we want to spruce things up with images. Or you're sending an email to your email list or whatever, promo items. There's lots of things we use images for now. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about royalty-free photo sites, which I know, you know, there's some that are well-known, but there's a couple I have that you may not have heard of before. So I have Pixabay, which is pixabay.com. which is a really good one. They have a lot of pretty high quality ones. And I think a lot of us know about that one, but I like it because they're free for commercial use as well. They're not just free for non-commercial use is one good thing about that. But because you don't want to get in trouble using it for commercial use when you're not supposed to. And so then also for those, no attribution is required. I mean, you can give attribution and that's a nice thing to do, but you don't have to give attribution for photos that you get from Pixabay. And you can also, they give you the chance, the option to download in various sizes. So you can download like in small, medium, large, extra large, whatever, different pixel sizes and stuff. So that's good because maybe you, you know, you want it small already. You don't want to have to get it and fiddle with it, or you want it big because you're going to be using it for whatever. So you can download it in different sizes. And like I said, I think that sometimes when I go to free sites, they're not that great. You know, the different images, I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. The guy took that in his backyard or whatever.
Pixabay is really good though.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. But yeah. This one has a lot of images that I actually use or would use. So I think, oh, great. I found this one the other day and I need to think of some way to use it. It was this gorgeous photo of French macaron. And I was like, oh my God, friends, I was like so excited. And I saved it because I'm like, I got to use that anyway. Awesome. But yeah, so like I said, and Corinne said too, that's my go-to resource. But there's also some cool ones that have maybe less depth to them, but have some cool pictures too that aren't just like cheesy pictures like some of the ones, or real too niche-y or something. So there's unsplash.com, Pexels, P-E-X-E-L-S.com, and stocksnap.io. Those have some pretty good ones too. And we'll put those up on the show notes. And then, so I'd also just thinking like everything doesn't have to be free. I don't mind. And sometimes I do pay like Shutterstock, you know, which is where you pay for, but they have kind of a weird, they've changed it over the years, the way that you have to buy subscriptions. And it seems like it's really at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So if I really want one from Shutterstock for a specific reason, I'm happy to get it, or I'm going to be reproducing it a zillion times or whatever. But usually just, you know, for doing things like blog posts and other things where you want to look professional, those sites that I mentioned earlier will give you good resources, even though there may be cases mm-hmm. where you want to go pay at some place like Shutterstock. So, yeah. So then the next thing that I wanted to talk about was that once you have found that photo that you want to use, you may want to manipulate it in some way. You don't just say, here's the photo. You know, you may want to, you know, manipulate it by changing the way it looks or changing the edging. You want to make it rounded or I don't know, or put text on it, or, you know, mm-hmm. it's, you're using that image and part of a larger graphic that you want to create as a finished image that you're going to use again on LinkedIn or on blog posts, email lists, whatever you're going to be doing with that image, or a promotional item that you're coming up with. And so, you know, you can pay someone to do it, or you can use Canva, canva.com. So that's mm-hmm. a low cost per month that you pay. And I think it's, I don't know, $13 or $14 or something that allows you to create what they say, stunning design. I'll just read what they said because they kind of summarized it. Design anything in minutes with thousands of beautiful templates and images. So you can try the pro version for free for 30 days. And then if you choose the monthly option instead of paying the yearly fee, which you get a discount if you pay the yearly fee, but if you choose the monthly option, you can cancel it at any time. And so, yeah, I just think that helps, you know, for some of us, we don't always necessarily have the time or the money to go for every little thing we want to do to pay a professional designer. It's not worth it, but you want stuff that you do to look good. And so, and I think, do you use Canva too, Corinne?
I do. I love it.
Yeah. And they have, so I was thinking you can help me brainstorm about some of the templates they have. Cause I think where those, was the YouTube cards that you did, was that from, is that what you call that?
Yeah. The card? I use it for, I only have the free version and I use it for so much stuff. So you can make, something I think everybody should do is make themselves a LinkedIn header banner. On Canva.
They have templates for that. They have the right pixel size.
So, right. I am not only like the world's worst graphic designer, but I hate those things where it's like, it must be 1,186 yes. pixels wide or mm-hmm. whatever. They have pre-sized templates. Yes,
I know. That's what I love about it.
All so those things. So yeah, make yourself a LinkedIn header banner. And then I use it for little tiles for my online courses. I use it for YouTube's video start screens, like probably things that not everybody would want to do, but at least make yourself a LinkedIn header banner on there.
But what I think about that is though, is that like what we do, someone else might not want to use it for, but that tells people that there's templates for things that they may think, well, I don't yes. need that, but I need this. There's a whole bunch of templates for that kind of thing that anybody might right. think of.
So anything that you're struggling with where it's some, you know, online thing that has to be a certain size,
yes.
try Canva and see if they have a pre-made template for it, because that can save you a lot
of Twitter background, the Twitter header thing is different than the sizes for the Facebook thing, you know, and then sometimes they change them. Like, right. like, yeah, I know, of course it is. And years ago, I remember I paid to have someone do a really nice one on Twitter. And then like 6 months later, Twitter's like, oh, we've changed that. I'm saying, right. yeah. and then I paid someone to do it again, you know, so now I would just do it this way. So yeah, so that is a really good tool. And like you said, Corinne, the free version is very powerful as well. Mm-hmm. So, and also for the graphics that I did recently, that I wanted things to look consistent for for my book club, the book club for translators that I'm hosting online. Those I all did in Canva too. So that was good fun.
Cool.
Okay. Well, tell us your next tip, Corinne.
So my next one is forming an S corp and using an accountant. So I've had an S corp for, let's see, if I've been freelancing 18 years, I've had an S corp for probably at least 15 years. So here's the thing. In the US, if you don't form a corporation, you're considered what's called a sole proprietor. And the big hit there is that you pay American self-employment tax on everything you earn. And that is 15% on top of what you would pay if you worked for an employer, because you pay the employer and the employee portions of certain taxes. So if you are like my first year freelancing, I made $9,000. 15% of $9,000 isn't that big of a deal. But once you get into the, I'd say, you know, above $50,000, certainly above, you know, $60,000 to $70,000, this can be a huge money savings because, and stop, I was going to say, stop me if your eyes glaze over, but you can't. So I'm just going to glaze your eyes over here.
I'll scream, help!
No, it allows you to legally take some of your income as so-called salary, and which you do pay self-employment tax on, and some of your income as so-called corporate profit, on which you legally do not have to pay self-employment tax. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of see there, you know, like last year I made almost exactly $100,000. My business expenses were about $20,000. And the remaining $80,000 I split between salary and corporate profit. So 15% of $40,000 is $6,000, which I'd way rather have in my pocket. So the only issue, and another benefit I will mention, and this is like a real your mileage may vary thing, is if you live in a state that has a provision like California Assembly Bill 5 that requires translation companies to only do business-to-business transactions, mm-hmm. basically they can't, you know, for reasons we could do an entire episode on, they cannot hire freelancers who are in quote unquote the same line of work as the company. It may, emphasis on may, because this is still evolving, help allow you to be hired directly by translation companies because it's considered a business to business transaction if you have an S corp. Now that is, don't take my word for it on that one. If you live in California or a state that has a similar provision, verify that with somebody who knows a lot more about it than I do.
Well, and also someone who's not a doctor, does not play one on TV, and is not an attorney, but who's done a lot of research into this, who may be someone to follow, and I think is posted on LinkedIn about this, is Marion Rhodes.
Oh, right.
Translator who's very active in following AB5, and that's Marion. Mm. We can try to put the information to her website too, or wherever she's been posting on that. Marion Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S.
Yeah, so really good idea. So yeah, with the asterisk with an S corp is S corps are required to file payroll taxes 4 times a year and do a separate corporate tax return. I pay my accountant to do all of that, and it costs about $1,000 a year. But even so, last year I came out about $5,000 ahead by having an S corp. And then I think there are some fringe benefits. You don't have to give clients your personal social security number. You can have an actual corporate 401k plan. So I have a 401k plan for my company. And I feel like just emotionally, I like the idea of having a corporation because it allows me to see myself as the corporation's employee. And for example, ask like, what does this employee need in order to continue doing a good job? She needs a new computer. She needs some paid vacation. She could really use some paid vacation right now. I'll tell you that, but she can't.
And not in your backyard.
Right. Yes. She can't go anywhere. It's not for everyone, but I'd say if you are listening to this and you earn more than, let's say, $50,000 a year, look into forming a corporation.
There's two things I want to say on that. The first thing is, one, that I am also an S corp, and I wasn't when I first started either, but I have been, I don't know how long, for I've been one for a long time. And if you're starting out, do it as soon as you can. I think if you decide it's good for you, do it as soon as you can, because it's kind of tricky where for a while the IRS kept sending me stuff saying, you're not paying taxes as a sole proprietor, when I was like, yeah, but now, and it was scary. Yeah. So the IRS is not known for its and then I kept having to send them documentation saying no, I'm paying taxes, but I'm now an S corp. Mm-hmm. So the sooner you can do it, the better, I would say. But that was the first thing. And the second thing was for our listeners who live outside the U.S. I would just say that obviously that particular structure doesn't exist in your own country, but I'm sure often there are different mechanisms.
There's something so analogous.
It's worthwhile, looking and not just thinking, oh, it's kind of, it's overwhelming, I just want to be a sole proprietor. It's worthwhile looking into what could serve you better if that's available for freelancers.
Right. Great. Yeah. Over to you.
Okay. So my next thing is just as on project management. And so what I wanted to say was, even though you may not do project management as a paid service, we all do project management, whether we admit it or like it or not. For the projects that we take on and in life in general. So even if you're plugging your ears and closing your eyes and screaming, la, 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 no, I don't do project management, you really do just by existing. So so I think we all need some tools. You may do it professionally in just by managing, your day-to-day work for yourself, and you may involve other people too. I don't know, but we all do project management, whether it's with the capital P and M or a lowercase P and M in some fashion. So if you need or would like to have a tool to help you with that, here's a couple tools that have a free component and a paid component that are pretty powerful. So the first one that I learned about when I took over as the PR, the chair of the PR committee for ATA from our colleague, Madalena Sanchez Zampalo, is Asana. And so I wasn't aware of that one before, so I think that might be new to some people too. It's Asana, and we'll put up the link for that. That is very easy to use. It's colorful. I like that part. It's customizable workspace, and I use it on various ATA projects, volunteer projects that I'm using that I need to organize with lots of other people. And so they have features that you can pay for, but we don't pay for it. And it's very powerful even in the free version. And once in a while, I'll get a thing where it'll say if you want to do this, but more it's suggesting to me, oh, you could also do this if you paid for it. And I'm thinking, I don't care about that. I'm having fun doing the free version. So it's not that I'm clicking and it's saying, sorry, you can't do that. It'll suggest.
You could add up to 65 team members if you have
the paid
version.
Or whatever, exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, but I don't need to do that. It's not that I'm maxing out, it doesn't. So it's really powerful even just for the free version, but you can also pay if you would like to, if there's things you need. So that's Asana. And then Basecamp is, I think, a pretty well-known one, and it has a free and paid version as well. And I thought it was really interesting. On their own website, they say that the free version is specifically targeted at, and now I quote, freelancers, students, families, and personal projects. See, you can project manage your personal projects. It's not just me that does that. Yeah. And so I think for most people, unless you have a specific business reason to do otherwise, you probably don't want to use the paid version for just freelance and personal projects, because it's $99 a month. But you may have a business imperative that would be worth it for you to do that for some client. But anyway, but it's a pretty well known, and people seem to really like it, and that you can use for free too. So another one that I use specifically for my to-do list is called Todoist. I guess that's how they say it, Todoist. It's Todoist, as if it's one big word. But I've read different things online about some people using it for group project management. So you can look into that too. And it wasn't necessarily made for that, but the way you can assign things to people and share things, it makes it amenable to a certain type of project management. And it also has an easy... a pleasant interface to look at. It's customizable, and it has a nice app that also syncs with the online version. Because sometimes, you're running around and you want it to be on the app, but sometimes you like to use the bigger interface, and then it syncs really well together.
Cool.
And then the last one that I wanted to mention that I just found out about from that webinar that I attended with ACES, which I didn't know about, was Toggle Plan. So I know a lot of us know about Toggle now, you know, and you see that different, we've been talking about that for years and different people know. And Toggle, so it's from our friends at Toggle Time Tracking. And because we all love that so much, I was like, oh, Toggle Plan, that they also have a project management tool. I'm so excited because mm-hmm. their time tracking thing is so great. So I just found out about it recently and I haven't had time to really explore it in depth, but it comes, like I said, with good cred because it comes from the time tracking team. And also the interface looks really modern and colorful and easy to use. And what I liked about it was it kind of has a graph that is similar to the Microsoft Project graph, but you don't have to use Microsoft Project. You can share it with everybody. And a certain, there's a paid version, but there's also a free version. So I'm really excited to learn more about that. And if anybody wants to share anything about that, if they know more about it, but I'm going to be focusing on Toggle Plan because what I've seen of it so far, I really liked. So so that's what I had on project management tools.
Cool. So my next one is a quick one, but I think has a bigger picture application as well, which was hiring a webinar assistant. So any of you who have taken online classes with me know that for years and years, I hosted all of the live sessions for my online courses myself, even when I wasn't the one teaching the class. And about, a little over a year ago, I decided I needed to make a change. And really it was when I started doing more in-person interpreting and I wanted to have more schedule flexibility. And I was lucky to find an incredible local assistant, Jessica, who used to be an IT project manager and is actually better than I am, much better than I am at being a webinar host. She is a super detail-oriented person. And now she hosts most of the live sessions for my classes when I'm not the one teaching them. So I think the moral of the story there is that I think all of us as freelancers are often too reluctant to spend money that really is an investment in our business. So we all know that, you know, investment can be sort of marketing speak, like investment in this yoga retreat, you know, $3,000. But sometimes it really is an investment and not an expense because this has allowed me to really expand the component of my online course business that are the courses taught by other people, which are not only very popular, but people seem to find very helpful. So I think my sort of bigger picture tip there is you need to, in your business, really differentiate between an expense and an investment. Mm-hmm. And if there is something that you're avoiding spending money on that you have the sense could really help you do the job better, then I think you should consider it because I'm really, really, really happy. Like now I don't know what I would do without her. Okay.
And because you're saying it helps you spend time doing something else mm-hmm. and she's continuing to help you make money and to get nice information out to everybody or to get Correct. Good information, helpful information out.
Yeah. Yep.
So good. Okay. Well, my last one is a little bit different than the rest of mine. It's a hardware thing.
Oh, my and last one is hardware too.
Yeah. Oh, goody. Okay.
We're friends. Yeah.
So I have to start not with a story, but kind of an introduction. So I have Sonos at my house and I really love it. This is not a tip, but sometimes I want something a little more personal than Sonos. And I also don't want to wear headphones. So, you know, Sonos is not headphones. It's out, you know, and it just mm-hmm.
plays it over
out.
Right
yeah
in the air
whatever yeah and I do wear headphones sometimes like right now to record the podcast but I'm not particularly a headphone person and my ears are, I guess really sensitive and they just give me a headache after a while. And so now here's my tip, my tool that I love is enter the Wonderboom portable Bluetooth speaker. And so this is going to be an ad.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at the name Wonderboom.
I know. And we'll give it to you guys, but there, it's like something about ears is their actual URL. It's really funny. But so it's small and super portable, but it has great sound. It's about 4 inches high and 3 inches across. And it also, I mean, it's whoever was the designer on this or whoever the team that worked in it was like really, it's like a hip portable speaker. That's mm-hmm. Like I didn't even know a hip portable, like it's, you know, that even exists, but it is. And so it has these cool little buttons that you can control right from the speaker itself, the volume, and also pausing it. And so I just think that sounds like a small thing, like you said earlier, a small thing, but it's annoying when you're listening to it and then maybe you get interrupted and I have to grab my phone, you know, unlock it and then go in there and stop the speaker. Mm-hmm. Instead, you can just touch the...
Oh, that is cool, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, this is cool. Stop it immediately. Yeah. And so I really like that. And we're like, oh, like we're listening to something and then for some reason, the audio gets really loud and I can just, oh, I'm going to just put it down really quick. Instead of, it literally, that sounds funny, but all the time, like you said, you know, it's annoying to have to get your phone, unlock it, go to that app, blah, blah, blah. So I'd rather just do it immediately on there. So that's kind of cool. And then also what I really liked about this, I know this sounds dumb too, but I put off getting a Bluetooth speaker for a really long time because I thought like, you know, I have a, in my condo, I have a different, our place in the mountains, I have one that's wired because I thought I can't stand it when you do Bluetooth stuff and it doesn't work because I want it to work.
And it's scratchy and yeah.
Yeah, or it keeps falling out or whatever. But for me, the Wonder Boom is wonderful because the Bluetooth has always worked without fail.
Oh, cool. Because so Bluetooth can be a bit of a, you know, spotty technology, I find.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's at least with my Samsung phone that I have and the Bluetooth, it works perfectly and I love that part. Mm-hmm. Also, it has this cute little... like a rope. It's like a rope thing that you can put your finger through, like a loop. Mm-hmm. And so you could use it. You could put a carabiner on it and you could attach it to your bike or something. How people do. I don't do that bike thing.
Or on your backpack.
Yeah, right. When people ride by with their music, I think that's kind of obnoxious, but you know. But yeah. It's nice to have the loop to grab, or you can just even pick it. You can just pick it up easily with one hand. Mm-hmm. And so, the way I got to get to this is my son asked for a Bluetooth speaker for Christmas, last Christmas. And I was like, what do you need that for? And you already have Sonos.
Right.
And then, but once he got his speaker, I got it for him anyway, because I'm a nice mom and I wanted to get him the present he wanted. I could really see the possibilities. And so since it's kind of a personal device, if you ask me, I think it's kind of a personal thing. I wanted my own. So I've had mine for 7 months now. And I want to talk to you a little bit, how is this related to work stuff and how do I use it? You know, so especially during the pandemic and being cooped up, I wanted to give others their own sound space as well. So I don't always want the Sonos, just, you know, like, oh, here, I'm
Sonos,
listening.
You have to pick one thing that plays throughout the house, right?
There's no, you can do it in different rooms, but like a lot of times I'm in the kitchen or I'm in the living room and that's the same one for us. Then everybody else is forced to listen to the podcast or everyone else
listens to
the audiobook.
Yeah.
And also for me personally, it's like sometimes when it's something like not, when it's not music, when it's something that I'm really listening to closely, like the news or something like, or an audio book or the podcast, I want to hear it myself a little closer than above my head, at least in my house or above my head or, you know, in the room. And I feel like, oh, what did she say? You know, I want something that's closer to me. Oops. Sorry, I had something weird happen with the computer there. Sorry. It's back. So. Corinne, are you still there?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Okay, it didn't affect the connection there we have. Sorry, guys. So, so what else did I want to say? Sorry, I lost my notes there.
That you like to have it playing, like not, you know, echoing through the room if you're listening
especially during this time of pandemic. At my house, there's five of us, and I don't want to force everyone else to hear that all the time. You know, when they're like, Mom, I don't want to hear your podcast or whatever. So it's just really fun. I just never knew a little speaker could make me so happy, and and I just really love it. And so so what was I going to say here about? So what I've been doing is listening to podcasts, and a lot of times those are usually for me business related in some fashion. Like it's either that I'm listening to French podcasts to help keep my French up, or I'm listening to like different podcasts about translation or different podcasts about a specialty area or whatever. So this is how it's all related to the business side. And also I may listen to audiobooks in whatever language, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I really love about it is that for at least for us, you know, for anybody for Sonos, it needs to be on Wi-Fi, so I can also listen to it outside because the Bluetooth doesn't even need need to have data, it doesn't need to have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You can download some audio to your phone and you can listen to it through the speaker. So I can go out on my my porch, I can go out on my balcony, and where I don't get internet really, for the internet at our house doesn't work that well out there, and I can listen to it out there, and it doesn't matter that I don't have Sonos out there. Mm-hmm. So I really like it. And also, one thing you can do with the Wonder Boom is you can buy two of them and you can put them together as if they're stereo, you know? So if you don't have Sonos and you thought, oh, well, I want something, but I don't have Sonos, then you could do that. I don't do that because I don't use it that way because I have Sonos otherwise, but you could get two of them and make it stereo. So that's kind of cool. So,
neat.
and also I got the version that's waterproof, and I just think that's really fun. I haven't even used that part yet, but I'm like, I could put it in the shower. I could put it in the bathtub.
Right.
It could fall in and it wouldn't matter.
Or if you're right, taking a walk and it's raining.
Yeah. So I just want to read, again, the Wonder Room's website says, it's a super portable Bluetooth speaker with surprisingly big sound. Sound that is clear, crisp, and full of big, beautiful bass. Or you can use that or not use it, like I know. So anyway, yeah. So that's my like infomercial for Wonder Boom speakers.
Yeah. Well, and unknowingly, my last thing is really, really similar. So mine is the AirShox bone conducting headphones. Mm-hmm. So AirShox is spelled S-H-O-K-Z, of course. If we'll put the link in the show notes. So I will say, to preface this, like Eve, I have both personal and professional uses for these. And one thing I have learned is, if you want to get, you know how we always say, if you want to get a bunch of translators screaming at each other at the top of their lungs, talk about the Oxford comma. If you want to get a bunch of interpreters screaming at the top of their lungs at each other, talk about headphones. So if you are an interpreter and you think that you would never, ever, ever use bone conducting headphones, it's a personal choice, and I'll tell you why I like them. So if you've never seen them, what bone conducting headphones are is, so they are also Bluetooth, so they're wireless, and they're a little headband thing that runs around the back of your head. So like personally, I put them under my hair. And then they have two little devices, which are a little bigger than a standard earbud, I'd say, but they don't go in your ears. They go over your ears. And they just sit on the sides of your skull. So it sounds a little creepy if you've never used them before. And it is a little creepy the first time you hear music playing like through your skull instead of through your, instead of through your ears. But I now love them. So I got them because, so my daughter got a pair for using at the gym. Because, so the obvious advantage and why this ties into interpreting is they are the opposite of noise canceling. They let you hear all the ambient mm-hmm. noise around you because there's nothing in your ears. Mm-hmm. And again, like you, it's a little weird the first time you use them, but the whole point is that you hear every bit of ambient noise that you would hear if you weren't listening to music or podcasts or whatever. So my daughter got them to use at the gym because she felt like, both for, you know, social purposes and safety, that she likes to be able to hear what's going on around her when she is, you know, using them at the gym. And then you have the added bonus that there's no cord. Mm-hmm. So I tried hers and I liked them so much that I got a pair too. And here's how I use them. Since the pandemic, I, like lots of interpreters, have been doing a fair bit of phone interpreting, because the Colorado courts have switched to telephone only for the moment. Mm-hmm. They're not doing any having interpreters come to any in-person hearings. And I find that when I use, because I have a good set of noise canceling headphones as well, but I have a tendency that I think lots of interpreters have, that I then talk too loud so that I can hear myself. So mm-hmm. in interpreting, that's called self-monitoring, that you want to be able to hear yourself talking. And I find that I get into this sort of vicious cycle of, I talk too loud and then I turn the volume up on my phone because then I can't hear the person on the phone because I'm talking. And I find that with the AirShox, I can talk at a completely normal volume and it sounds perfectly clear to the person on the other end of the phone. I've even asked people, can they hear anything different when I'm using them? And they cannot. So I have to say, if you are in a situation where you have to do phone interpreting, I love them for that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So they have a microphone too, you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that the same version or are there different versions of them? Like, did your daughter?
So my daughter and I both have the, I believe they're called the AirShox Air. I'll have to put that in the show notes. But yeah, the ones that we have, they specifically have a built-in microphone so that you can use them for talking on the phone. So I use them for phone interpreting. And then, like you said, Eve, there are a few social purposes that I think are kind of pandemic specific. So I use them now when I want to listen to podcasts while I'm taking walks, because I find, you know, same thing. I actually do like to hear the ambient noise around me when I'm walking, like cars and other people. And then I also find that, you know, because my family and I spend 24 hours a day together now, that there are times when I would like to do something like listen to a podcast, but without the antisocial feeling of having earbuds stuffed in my ears, as if I, you know, don't want to listen to what anyone else is doing.
You're right. And that's kind of what I like about the, I didn't think about that consciously, but now that you say it, I like that too about the Wonder Boom. I'm not like, unless they come right up to me, they're probably not going to hear it anyway because I have it low, but I don't like it where I'm just like, don't talk to me, got headphones in, you know.
Correct. And like, maybe that's just us. And maybe that's partially specific to the pandemic that, you know, when you're spending 24 hours a day together, one of the things that you sort of end up trying to figure out, I think, is how do you spend time together without always wanting to be talking to each other? Because at a certain point, there's nothing left to say when you've been together for that long. But for example, and again, maybe this is just me, if my husband is sitting on the couch reading a book and I'm sitting on the other end of the couch, I feel like it's a little bit antisocial to shove my noise canceling earbuds in my ears as if he can't, you know, interrupt me and be like, oh, there's this cool thing in this book I'm reading.
Yeah.
Whereas with the aftershocks, part of it is if you have long hair, they don't show. You can't even tell that someone's wearing them. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like because your ears are open, it's a little bit easier to have a 2-second conversation with someone rather than being like, wait, what? Hang on. Let me pause my podcast.
Exactly.
What did
That's
you
the
say?
Same idea too. Yeah. Where I was saying like, you don't have to go to the phone to turn it off or whatever. Or turn off. Yeah.
It's exactly.
More natural.
So for example, sometimes I wear them when I'm cooking dinner, you know, when one of my other family members might be in the room with me and might talk to me for a few seconds, and that it looks a little antisocial. Like, I think when you have earbuds in, you're specifically saying like, I don't want to talk to anyone.
Right.
And if you have like Eve speaker or like the AirShox headphones, you can listen to your sort of, you know, personal, whatever you want to be listening to without that antisocial feeling of don't talk to me. Which again, in the pandemic, sometimes I do that too. I put in my earbuds.
All right, not forcing everyone to listen to it, but not shutting yourself up.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's it. And then I think my 30-second bonus tip is take advantage of online training from people and entities that don't normally offer online training and are doing a lot more of that right now. So like Eve mentioned the ACEs stuff. I've done already one full day training and I'm going to do another one through IEEC, the International Association of Conference Interpreters. They don't often have online training, but they do have it now because it's the only option. So I think if you have extra time right now, that's a good way to use it, is especially something that either you'd have to pay a membership fee or travel for, that now I feel like that stuff is a lot more open.
Mm-hmm. There may still be a fee, but maybe they don't even normally offer online training, and or it could be free. Yeah.
Correct. Like this IEEC, I did a IEEC all day training with David Violet. It was amazing on note taking for long consecutive interpreting. So it was the same registration fee as what they had been planning on charging for the in-person session, but one did not have to travel to San Francisco to do it.
Nice.
One could do it from one's own home. So yeah.
And we're all in a positive way, I suppose we're all going to be spoiled now. And when we don't want to travel later, we'll be insisting, but you can do that remotely.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thanks, Corinne, for sharing all your tips.
Yeah, you too. I got some good ideas from you as well.
Fun.
Okay. So thanks everybody for joining us. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, you can comment on our website, speakingoftranslation.com. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. And if you have an idea for an episode, send us an email at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com. And we will talk to you in a future episode.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time.